You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode number 22 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by the band Awful Normals. Awful Normals is a three-piece punk band from Orange County, California. They just released a new EP entitled Songs of Love and Blame. It was mixed by legendary producer Ryan Green and mastered by Jason Livermore of The Blasting Room. For more information, check out facebook.com/awful.normals.com or on Instagram @awful_normals. Now here it is, their new single, Colorblind Motel.
This is Stefan from Descendants, and you're listening to That One Time on Tour with Chris Swinney.
Run for the road, cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. We'll be heading for the cities, another show for us to play. To get back in the van, cause tomorrow we'll do it. We'll do it all again.
Hello and welcome to another episode of That One Time on Tour. As always, I'm your host, Chris Swinney. Thank you guys so much for checking out last week's episode with Johnny P-Bucks Bonnell from the Swinging Utters. It was a great episode. I had a huge, huge response, and hopefully you guys went out and got their new record, Peace and Love, out on Fat Records. So go get that. This week, we have another amazing episode. I actually got to sit down in person with Mr. Stephen Edgerton from The Descendants. The Descendants are one of my favorite bands of all time, so it was a big thrill to get to sit down with Stephen. They invited me down to their show, and they could not have been more gracious or hospitable, so big shout-outs to The Descendants, especially Stephen. Before you guys get to hear my conversation with Stephen, I do want to tell you about some amazing sponsors that help keep the lights on here at That One Time on Tour. I want to tell you about Your Button Guy. Your Button Guy is your one-stop shop for everything button and magnet related. He's got everything that you need. So go on Instagram and hit him up at Your Button Guy, or you can email him directly, yourbuttonguy@gmail.com. He sent some buttons to the show, and I'm trying to get rid of them. So if you want a button, all you have to do is review us in the iTunes store or wherever else you listen to podcasts, screenshot it, tag us in the post on Instagram, and I'll hit you up for your address and I'll send you a free button. So there you go. Thanks a lot, Your Button Guy. I also want to give a big shout out to Sticker Wolf. They are working on a logo for us as well as some stickers. You can check them out at stickerwolf.com or at stickerwolf on Instagram. I can't get out of here without telling you guys about rockabilia.com. They've been on board as a sponsor for a while now, but rockabilia.com has everything you've ever wanted from any band you've ever listened to. They have over 500,000 unique items officially licensed by the band. Make sure at checkout when you're getting all your cool stuff, you put in the promo code PCTOTOT to get 15% off your entire order. I also have to tell you about Muncie Music Center once again, the store that I work at. I teach guitar, bass, ukulele, everything with strings. They have everything you've ever wanted. Guitars, drums, saxophones, trombones, whatever you want. They've got a recording studio. They are a wonderful store right here in Muncie, Indiana. If you're not here in Muncie, you can check them out on MuncieMusic.com. Or if you are here in town, you can go to 600 South Mulberry Street and check out Muncie Music Center. Okay, guys, make sure that you are following us on all of the social media platforms at TOTOT Podcast. Leave us some love, some hate. Tell us a story on the TOTOT hotline. That is 1-765-372-8818. We also have a new merch store, so if you're following us on Instagram or Facebook, you can get some cool gear now with our cool logo that we ripped off of Black Flag. Don't tell Greg. So without further ado, I'm going to jump into my conversation with Mr. Stephen Edgerton from The Descendants. Hope you guys enjoy it. Here we go. So yeah, I'm sitting here on a very luxurious couch with Stephen from The Descendants. So how are you doing, man? Thanks for being on the show.
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
I was really excited to get to come see you guys, and thank you so much for the hospitality. And I haven't done a lot of these in person. So like I said earlier, you're kind of popping my cherry here.
Yeah, that's cool. Got to try it somehow.
And it's a little bit, I'm a little anxious because I know you record. So, you know.
Well, I mean, this, you know, I record very informally.
Okay.
Too.
At one point, I was in this band called The Widow Jenkins. And it was during the Atari's run. And we had contacted you about doing some demos, and you said yes, but we never got the funds together. You probably don't remember that at all.
I don't remember that, but I can, that's a story I've had quite a few times.
Well, I sent you like a demo, and you're like, yeah, this is really cool, man. Just let me know. And then we never got the money together.
No, I mean, it's hard to make all of that come together.
Well, I was playing in the Ataris, and like that was all taken care of, but this was like a side kind of deal, and it's like, oh, yeah, well, we're paying for it on our own, and nobody had any money.
We're all normal people,
So why don't you tell me how this run is going? We're going to kind of jump around a lot on this. I want to know about history and whatnot. I mean, I'm sure everybody that's listening, and me personally, I've seen filmage. I know the whole story. But tell me about this run of shows, and how does it feel to still be kicking ass in The Descendants, man?
Well, the run of shows has been fantastic. Really, you know, we have the luxury of a really, really nice touring schedule that allows us to sort of come out, have a blast, have a very, you know, we'll call it a party environment minus the, you know, heavy partying, because that's not really something that we're all into. But the shows are an event for us. They're a big deal. It's a chance for us to get together and hang out, because we're still all very close friends, and, you know, and play, yet we're not just burned ourselves out to death, you know, doing laps around the country like we did so many decades before.
Are you guys doing a lot of like fly-in type things?
Yeah, what we've been doing this year mostly is flying in and then doing a three or four show run, like usually just in a bus, and we don't get hotels or anything. We just sleep on the bus.
Okay,
kind of stay there, and then we get to, you know, whatever the fourth show is, I'll fly home tomorrow from here from Indianapolis.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah. So it's awesome.
So you guys were in Chicago last night. Could you tell me a little bit about that? I've got a lot of friends up there, and I've seen the posts, and it looked amazing. So
well, the Chicago show this time around was interesting. We did another similar show earlier this year. I believe that it was part of a festival put on by a brewery, and so there were a lot of brewers there. There was a lot of beer.
350 Fest.
350
like
Fest,
that.
And it was unusual in that it was in what was essentially a convention center with a hotel attached to it. So it was an unusual venue by today's standards, because most cities have a regular punk rock club, yeah, if they're a decent sized city that would have us anyway. But through our many years of touring, we, of course, those venues didn't exist back then. So playing, unusual places is, yeah, not foreign to us. So it was like, oh, today we're in a convention center and they're drinking beer on a carpeted floor. This is really weird. But the show itself, once the lights went out, it was a show, and it worked great. It was, really good. Actually sounded really good in there, which I know that probably doesn't matter
much. I mean, the carpet might have been part of that,
well,
right?
It was an acoustically treated room to an extent, because it's such a massive room, they have to kind of kill off some of the echo in, yeah, there. And so it actually sounded better than a lot of places do. That was kind of weird. But
that's really cool.
But it was cool. The show was really fun. Less Than Jake was up, who we've toured with, a bazillion times, and super good friends. And
they like to have fun. I hung out with them on Warped Tour a couple times.
They're, yeah, absolutely. Crazy. They're all really fun guys. So that was cool. It was all, between Wilhelm, Smoking Popes, all the bands we were playing are all friends.
I mean, the three band bill for tonight, as well as, I guess a lot of these shows you guys have been playing with Smoking Popes and Wilhelm Scream, that's a killer bill, man.
Yes, that is a killer bill.
When
that
I saw it, because really I didn't cool. know, I knew you guys were touring, and then I saw who was open, I'm like, oh my God, like that's a
We've
dream.
Been playing a lot with Wilhelm. Wilhelm Scream, has been recording stuff at the Blasting Room off and on,
yeah,
since they started their band.
When they were on Nitro even before that, I think, a long time ago.
I think Bill recorded their first EP, a long time ago.
Well, I even 15, remember
15, 17 years
I remember ago, when they were called, like, I think they were called Much the Same or something like that. There's a band from Chicago called Much the Same, but I think they had that name as well, and that's why they changed it. I could totally be getting it wrong.
Oh.
But I've been listening to those guys since before they were even signed. Like I heard them on Napster.
Oh,
that's how long ago that was.
Well, they're a fantastic band. And the Smoking Popes, I was kind of somewhat of a latecomer to them. I guess not now. Now I've known about them for a long time, but I hadn't really heard them when they were kind of active, and we never happened to play together. But as soon as I heard them, I really liked them. I have a great love for their melodic twists, yeah, in their songs. That's right up my alley. So yeah, that's a killer bill. It's really fun.
I was really excited.
Yeah,
and I haven't. I'm a dad. I haven't really been out of the house for
Minnie Swinney.
Yeah, Mini Swinney, yeah. See, Silas, Stefan's giving you a shout-out. He actually likes The Descendants, so I was playing, I was going to tell you, this camp that I'm doing, I do a music workshop. Jason, my producer here, is actually my partner in the camp, and some of the kids are doing Hope.
Oh, rad.
And I've got a video of it I posted and I tagged you. I don't know if you saw it, but I was letting Silas hear that.
Oh, I did see that. I want to see that.
That's but, cool. Yeah, he's 2.5, but he's digging The Descendants.
I don't want to grow up. That's a pretty good one to sink your teeth into when, yeah, you're that age, right?
Yeah, and I just got him his first Misfit shirt, so next is a little, Milo shirt.
There we go.
Everything will be good.
I always want, someday we need to make one that instead of saying Descendants, it just says Descendant.
There you go.
Without the S on the end.
Definitely, man.
We never did that. Should do that.
So I know you're a father as well.
Yes.
How did that change? I mean, I know it changed a lot of your life because I'm a dad. And I know how it is. But as far as being a touring musician, it's gotta be nice to kind of do these not weekend warrior things, but shorter runs.
Yeah. Well, my wife and I starting our family dovetailed with sort of all not really so much. All never broke up formally, but all was not a band that drew enough people to really sustain much of a living for four people and a couple of crew guys. So we sort of had ceased to tour, out of just kind of lack of, yeah, ability to really do so. That happened around the time that I started my family. And so there was about a 5-year period where I didn't do any shows at all. Nothing. Okay. I just was full on dad guy. You know, my wife and I pulled up stakes. We moved to Tulsa, where her parents live, so that we could have, you know, grandparents. We could have a larger family for the kids. And that, you know, worked out really well. That first 5 years, I was just fully, you know, kind of neck deep in parenting and during the real critical time there. And then a little, once, you know, here and there, shows started to, you know, kind of pepper their way in very slightly. And by the time we started doing, you know, the regular thing like we're doing now, with some consistency again, my kids were old enough to, you know, they were well launched, let's put it that way. And now they're, you know, 14 and 17. So they're, you know, they're quite functional. They can hang for a few days without me.
What do they think of their dad being in such a, you know, seminal punk rock band? It's got to be pretty cool.
Well, they definitely like it, but I mean, I'm dad, you know, they're not,
they don't know any different, right?
Yeah. So they, you know, my son likes to come. He doesn't like to come to shows as much as my daughter does. My daughter is a music fiend, and so is my son. But the big volume and craziness of a show is much less appealing to him. So he comes to fewer. My daughter would go to as many of them as she possibly could. She switched camps. Her favorite band overall is Rise Against. She loves Rise Against.
That's
she could
great.
Recite every lyric they ever wrote to anything.
That's
She's
crazy, man.
Completely into them.
Zach's going to be on the show in the next couple weeks.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, yeah. Well, he's that's like,
I know you guys
like
are
my
tight.
Brother from a different mother. Yeah, him and Donnie both.
I told him you were going to be on the show, and he's like, oh, that's great.
Yeah, so, yeah. They're, those guys are the sweetest. They're the best. They're into it that I do this. They think, I'm sure they get some amusement out of it. And
probably
and
some once, perks once in a while as
once
well.
Once in a while it works out like that. Like my daughter's philosophy he's teaching her philosophy this year, and what did he teach her last year? Physics last year, in high school. He's a fan, you know.
That's
he's like,
awesome.
Wait, your dad's in the Descendants? What? You know, like, so that kind of stuff happens once in a while.
Well, I remember, like, off of that story, I remember on Filmage when Bill had his surgery and like his surgeon was a Descendants fan.
Yeah,
that's
Descendants
really cool.
Fan. Yeah, yeah, that was a hilarious. That was so weird for him when that happened. I remember. Right after, you know, the surgery, and when Bill and I were talking afterwards and he was telling me that story, I was just like, God, I can't believe this. What were the chances of that?
You kind of don't. I mean, sometimes, I mean, I've never been in a band, you know, as legendary as you guys are, but you kind of don't ever know the reach. I guess sometimes it kind of just goes over your head. I mean, I know just in the smaller bands that I was in, sometimes I'll meet somebody and I'll tell them, oh yeah, I used to play in this band, and then they freak out. And I just don't, I don't think it's a big deal. So, I mean, it's got to kind of even be double for you.
Well, it's, you know, I sit in an interesting position in this band because I was a huge fan before I was in the band. And so I have the sort of duality of being like an ultra fan guy, and that hasn't entirely left me.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is still the band that made Milo Goes to College. That record, like,
that record's
blew
amazing.
My mind.
Yeah.
As did the Fat EP before it. So, you know, that part of it is a pretty big deal for me. And I promoted shows in Salt Lake where I grew up, and, you know, bands were typically coming through, staying at our house, bands that are now legendary, you know, Dead Kennedys, I'd put on them, or I'd put on Black Flag.
That's awesome.
And so, you know, you meet those bands, and the I met them when I was young, and they were all really small bands. You know, these are guys that are just traveling around in vans, just trying to, like, pave the roads of the punk rock scene that grew from it. And they were all very personable and all, you know, very just kind of normal people, because there was really... What are you going to do? Be all competitive or weird? I mean, you make like $5 a day.
Nobody was making money back then.
You're losing money. And, you know, so there wasn't, you know, you didn't do it for those reasons, because those reasons simply didn't exist. So I like to try to remember that piece of it, you know, and yes, you know, it grew to where I could make a living out of it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
which is crazy, right?
Mind blowing that, you know, that you can actually do that. And so, you know, the fact, you know, one thing I made note of in the last few days, since we were talking earlier about, like, this little run of shows, every one of these last three shows that we've done, I don't know what it'll look like tonight, but the three shows before it, there have been a substantial amount of really young kids.
Okay.
Really young. And so, you know, it's funny to be part of something that happened to accidentally become like a multi-generational interest where, you know, when they were making the music before I was in it and when we were making music after I was in it, that expectation was not there. Yeah. That's not why you do it or how you don't even think that can really be part of it because this is just, you know, this little thing that you do for your own amusement. You just try to squeak by and, you know, not just, you know, go broke and die, you know, or whatever. You try to just limp the thing along and help it survive so that you can keep going because it's so much fun. That's sort of how it works. But, you know, now, you know, it's not uncommon to have a, you know, a three-generational night, you know, where you'll see dudes up in my age range, up in their, you know, mid-50s, and then, you know, people bringing their kids and stuff, and in kids knowing the songs, kids, you know, wearing your t-shirts and stuff, like, you
know, I know, like, if I have anything to do with it, you know, like, my kid's gonna, he's already a punk rocker, man, like, like, I put on one of your videos the other day, and because I have Comcast and you can like just say the band's name and then it'll bring up whatever. And I can't remember what song it was, but he was just running around. He grabbed his ukulele and he was like, and I just got him a drum kit the other day. So he's going to be a punk rocker.
There you go. Yeah. He's
if I have it my way, my wife would probably like him to probably be a little bit less punk rock, but he's going to be a punk.
Yeah. There's some of that's going to be in there, or at least, I think my kids' musical tastes have diverted somewhat from punk rock recently, which is expected. I mean, you can't just like your dad's music.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do that. You know, you have to sort of like find your own path. And so I'm trying to just go, I don't get your path, but whatever, go ahead. You know, listen to what you want, guys. It's cool.
So you joined in 86.
86.
Can you kind of, I mean, I know it's out there, it's in a million interviews, but can you kind of give me, like, the feeling when you joined a band that you really liked, like you already kind of talked about a little bit, and how did you lead up to being in the band?
Well,
you said you'd book shows for them in Black Flag and whatnot. I know Bill spent some time in Black Flag.
Yeah, and I mean, we knew Bill from Black Flag, and Carl and I, our bass player, Carl and I actually met in junior high. We've been friends since I was 11. He was 12 when we met. So we've known each other since seventh grade. We've been, you know, hanging out all this time. And we had a band in Salt Lake called the Massacre Guys. The Massacre Guys were together for about 5 years. Carl was in it for maybe three of those years. And so we used to open for Black Flag.
The bands that would come through.
All the bands
guys,
that would come through. And that was, so that was how we sort of got to know those guys. But at the time that I joined the band, I had actually sort of abandoned rock music in favor of classical guitar. I had heard this incredible record of two fantastic classical guitarists, John Williams and Julian Bream, doing this live recording that just blew my mind. And I just thought, I want to learn how to do that. That is so cool. And I had sort of gotten rid of all my stuff, you know, most of my electric guitars. I got a classical guitar and I'd moved to Washington, D.C. And so Carl was playing in another band and was actually staying with somebody who Bill called, a mutual friend. Bill called after Doug and Ray had left and he was looking for new guys. And Carl got put in touch with him. Well, when I called to congratulate Carl, he told me they needed a guitar player. So I flew out. We got in the room and played for 3 days. And just, you know, it was an instantaneous, easy thing to do. Probably a third of what became the Descendants All record, we played that 3 day chunk. Wow. You know, we tried everything we could, really weird, complicated stuff like you hear on that record, the more kind of, you know, ambitious.
Well, that's one of my favorite parts of the band, with like the guitar work. I mean, your guitar work, I really am inspired by, because I'm a big theory head. I teach guitar for a living now. And I don't know how versed in theory you are. It seems like, you are from what you do.
Well, 0%. But I grew up listening to a lot of fusion music. So I was really, really, like, a lot of the guitar players that inspired me before I discovered punk rock were you know, Jeff Beck and wow. John McLaughlin and Al Dimeola, Larry Coryell. I really liked Yes. I liked really ambitious guitar playing. Wow. Not so much. I missed out on metal. I didn't listen to really any metal, and I wasn't like a Van Halen guy really or anything like that.
I never liked the party metal.
Jazzy stuff. You know, my mom had a band briefly that had a guitar player in it that became my teacher. He was the one that turned me on to all of that stuff. And so it was floating around in my head, but I don't really know anything about it per se. So it's just like, you know, inspired by sounds I hear and me just trying to sort of find some of those on the guitar without really knowing what.
Because I mean, I know we're switching gears a little bit. I do want to go back to when you joined, but just no one sounds like the Descendants. And I know that's kind of a broad term, but just the way that the music is put together. And I know Bill writes a lot of it. I know you write stuff. Everybody in the band writes, but there's definitely a lot of the times when people talk about NoFX, there's like that NoFX chord. I don't know if you've ever heard anybody say that, but it's kind of that flat five, like weird, like dissonant kind of chord that they use a lot. There's definitely a Descendant sound. It's different all the time, but it's definitely like when I hear you play and if I didn't know it was you, I would know that it's you.
Well, it's, you know, that part of it is that is just something, you know, finding a musician with a very distinctive, recognizable sound.
Yeah.
It's funny because that's, you know, half the time it's stuff that they can't control. Keith Richards just sounds like
Keith Richards.
You know, there's nothing he can do about it. And I think that's definitely true in our, you know, in Carl and I's case. Bill was already, you know, had a very established, unusual sound.
Oh, yeah.
All of that first wave of punk drummers all had, you know, in particular, the Southern California ones, really, if you think about Robo and Bill and Chuck Biscuits and Lucky Lair, all of those guys, they all had unusual takes on rock drumming.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was, you know, I think one of the most exciting things for Carl and I to get to, you know, try to sort of fuse the weird little thing that we were doing in our living room, in our apartment at Salt Lake, you know, with that. Because we were, you know, trying some of those unusual, you know, time signatures and so on. Not deliberately, just we would write a riff and we would learn it and we would play it and that's how it goes. And it's a phrase. It's not like, oh, this is in 5/4. We wouldn't have known what the hell that meant.
We tried to cover Coolidge in the Ataris and I don't think it ever actually sounded the way we wanted it to sound. We tried really hard, but
well, it's a thing where a certain group of people, they just sound how they sound. You can't, it's funny. I had the opportunity to hear Frank, Tony, and Bill play together a few times. Because by the time Descendants were a touring entity and the one time I saw them while I was living in DC, Ray and Doug were playing with them. So later I got the chance to see them with Frank and Tony. And it sounds like Milo Goes to College. You put those three guys together and they start playing and it sounds like Milo Goes to College. I mean, it just does. It's, you know, you can't take that away. And that's kind of neat, you know, how that works.
That's awesome.
And you know, the kinds of techniques that develop accidentally without proper instruction for a lot of people, they become their defining sounds. And that's really definitely what happened, with all of us. There's interesting, unique approach and terrible, terrible technique in equal measure that contributes to you know, what you hear in all of these things. And so that's just how it comes together.
How are you on like scales? Because your solos are very distinct, a lot of chromatic runs. Like, do you just kind of know where to start, or do you actually kind of know what's going on with those?
I don't know what's going on with them generally. I know if I'm playing an A or E.
Yeah.
I mean, I know majors and minor chords. Scales. I mean, I know that part of it. I have spent a lot of time. I'll find scales on the internet, you know, go, Phrygian. Okay. I see, you know,
it's one of my favorite scales.
Mixolydian. You know, I'll survey that stuff just for my own interest. But that, when I'm looking at that stuff, it's usually to try to keep my fingers going.
Yeah.
It's really finger exercise, just trying to do, you know, so scales are meaningful to me in that way. But solos, they seem to come two ways for me. Either I write something that could be perceived almost like a vocal melody, something you could sing along with, like Clean Sheets is an example of that.
Clean Sheets is probably my favorite song, man. I love that song.
You know, it goes how it goes. Yeah. I do it the same way every time. And the average Joe can sing along with it.
Yeah.
And that's something I like in a guitar solo.
I mean, your solos are very melodic. I think that's the whole idea of almost being able to sing to it. They're catchy.
Yeah.
But then there also is some crazy stuff.
And then sometimes they kind of get, you know, sometimes that weird, you know, the weird part of it, influence kind of makes its way in.
Almost sounds jazzy sometimes.
Yeah. I think it's not a deliberate application of that. It's more of that is music that inspired me as a young person. So it's just kind of bouncing around in there along with all the Beatles crap, which is really like pretty much what I'm about is the Beatles.
That's cool.
That's pretty much it. The Beatles and Black Flag are my two.
Beatles and Black Flag. Those are two amazing bands.
Those are my two favorite bands. That's pretty much, you know, that's kind of where I put all my time.
So when you join, I want to go back for a second. When you joined the band, everything was good. Like, hey, you guys are in the band. It had to feel kind of amazing that you and your best friend joined a band that you loved.
Oh, yeah. Cloud Nine. We're making like $5 a day. We're stoked. We're just happy. We were great. And it really, that really hasn't changed. I mean, that part of it.
The $5 has changed.
That has changed, thankfully, because that was definitely not sustainable. But it, you know, the chance to do this thing with people who you're really, you know well, to have the ability to know exactly what they're going to do pretty much, you know, to be able to have that level of chemistry, to develop that chemistry, to nurture it, to further it, that is great. And the opportunity to do that is still immense for me. Huge.
How does it feel? You know, I know it's been a couple of years now since like you guys got a lot more active, but from like, you know, the Everything Sucks era, being on Epitaph when it seemed like you guys were pretty poised to kind of go, and then, you know, kind of going away for a while, and, you know, there was the All stuff, and, you know, I know you later on you did the Flag stuff, which I want to talk about here in a second. But how is it now that it seems like, even with the time taken off and all the, you know, the hiatuses and the families and everything, you guys are better than ever and bigger than ever? I mean, the shows are great. When I tell somebody, like, oh, do you like the Descendants? Even non-punk rockers know who the Descendants are.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that I mean, I'm still all the time amazed that there's still interest in these songs, and you know, thankful for it for sure. Yeah. But that's an amazing feeling, and to have people react so positively still this many years in, and what's funny is that unlike most bands, this last, I think it's been 7 years or so, is far and away the longest active period of Descendants, which is really strange.
Because, I mean, Milo always used to go back to college, right?
Yeah, Milo kept quitting to go to college, you know, which, you know, I think once we started doing this again, I guess that was 2010, I think it was.
Yeah.
He had so much fun that he was like, yeah, I like this. We can do this on some limited way.
He still got his scientist stuff going on. So
no, not anymore.
No, not anymore. No, really?
He got laid off. He got laid off. So he was like,
well, Trump's president.
Okay.
So
shows, here we go. So
science isn't what it used to be, I guess, anymore.
Yeah. But it really, I think it worked out great for him. He had reached a place in his career that I don't think he was getting a lot of satisfaction out of it. I think his career, you know, the arc of a scientist's career is to either make no money and do the science, or to make a decent living and be the administrator, which is kind of where he'd been. And I don't think he was getting any joy out of that. I don't think he was having much fun with it. So, and he was having fun doing this. So it's like,
well,
when
your fallback is to be in the Descendants, that's, that's pretty awesome.
When plan B is to, be in
tour the world and have a great time with your friends.
Yeah. So he's been more than happy with all that. And so you know, we've kind of got this, you know, nice amount of shows that we can do. We're in a position to do that. Not every band can do that. So we're incredibly fortunate. I guess that's, you know, that's the really nice thing that comes of having done all those laps and laps and laps over the years, building it up into something, you know, that now people are still interested enough in hearing to want to fly us out to play places. It's
That's
incredible.
Great.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So All, I love All. I was a huge champion for All. Got all the records. I know it didn't seem like it was received as well. And I know that's been talked about as well. You think that was people that like the Descendants were like, well, hey, this isn't the Descendants. Like, what do you think the reasoning was behind that?
Well, the thing is, I've never really exactly figured it out with All.
Because you guys did Conan. You guys were all over the place. Like, there seemed like there was a push on the band.
There was. There definitely was. And there was some interest. And not that we didn't have a lot of great shows. There were periods where we could have really good shows. You know, 500-600 people would come. It wasn't unusual. Even 1,000 sometimes. But there was... I don't really know. I would say that all four of us write. That's always been true. And I think what we were writing then was there was no cohesion.
Yeah.
And I think we entered a period musically where people wanted more cohesion. When I was a kid, a guy like Frank Zappa, who could put out anything, you know, he could just go wherever and none of it would surprise you. And you just accepted that as what he was. I mean, I saw Frank Zappa play in the Salt Palace in our big arena with a, you know, bazillion people that, you know, there was I think some degree of respect for a band that was really, really all over the map and kind of versatile and did a great variety. Well, one thing that seemed to change the way I saw it in audiences was, you know, less interest in that. People wanted a cohesive sound out of a band. You know, Green Day wrote, you know, kick-ass songs. They were a good band. They do, you know, but their thing is fair, you know, in the beginning was fairly cohesive. You got a Green Day record, sounds like Green Day. Doesn't sound like, what the hell just happened to Green Day? They just went off the deep end.
See, I always liked that about All, because it almost seemed like you didn't know what you were going to hear on the next track.
That is completely how it was. But I think that, I always thought that must be what turned audiences off, because one record to the next.
It wasn't the lack of a great singer, because you guys had.
No, we had three
great
of those.
Singers.
Yeah,
yes.
We had three of those. That, I mean, that was, you know, and maybe there was something to do with the changing of singers. That's, you know, and each one of those singers, when they would move on and do their own things, you know, we get a new singer. That new singer that would come in would change the band because it's 1/4 of the material. Generally speaking, we tend to run about 1/4, you know, of each record being done by each of us. So it kind of, you know, the band was always changing. And so not everybody's going to be into that. Musicians loved it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, that's probably
all
why.
Would play, you know, all would play the Warped Tour, and you know, there'd be like a few people out there watching in the front, you know, and then the entire, you know, the entire stage is lined with, you know, all of the different bands going, oh, I'm gonna go check All out. These guys are nuts, you know. So I feel like All, for what we were trying to do with it, was very successful. Not it wasn't financially successful, but that's not really, you know, the only arbiter of that.
I mean, I would put She's totally My Ex and some of those other songs up there with the best Descendants songs.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think people are really missing out. Hopefully anybody listening to this podcast, if you love the Descendants and you've never listened to All, you've got a lot of downloading to do.
Yeah, yeah, because there's a lot of stuff and it covers a lot of ground.
A lot of ground.
And you know, we've never been one to... We've never been a band that designed, you know, okay, let's talk about our next release. Well, I think we should head in this direction. That doesn't happen. Everybody writes what they write. We show up, we throw it on the pile. We see what we got. We play it all until, you know, we make comments on each other's stuff.
Yeah.
We hash it out until we like it, and then we put it out. And so that means that, you know, you live or die by that. And sometimes, you know, with All, it was something that didn't go over well.
Well, I do want to ask, I always... On these podcasts, I put up an Instagram post asking for fan questions. Mm. Our mutual friend, Christopher Rowe from the Ataris, he was very excited I was going to be speaking with you. So he wanted me to ask, is there going to be an All record in the future ever or soon?
Well, there is no plan for an All record, yet there is no reason that one couldn't happen. All over the last bunch of years well, you know, a couple things have changed about it that make it sort of interesting for all. We don't play very often. You know, it's usually only every couple of years, though we may be playing a couple songs tonight.
I think I know why you're doing that.
But the
moved to Bloomington.
Somebody
correct?
Moved to Bloomington. Yeah. So
I was telling him on the way down. I'm like, I bet that's going to happen. Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
That
for
could
this
happen.
Show.
That happened the other night. You know, they came up to.
And I'm
going to
get to play Hope, right?
Oh yeah, you know Hope, man. You got this.
I know how to play. anytime, man. Just let me know.
We could potentially do all, but over the last few years, it's kind of like, well, who's around to sing? You know, Scott, you doing anything?
Yeah.
You know, or like Scott will come and go, hey, somebody made an offer for like, you know, wants an all show with our lineup. Great. Okay. So we don't do that.
It's a lot of options. That's kind of cool.
But, you know, Chad is certainly the singer, you know, but he's an easygoing guy. He's kind of like, yeah, whatever, you know, we'll do whatever's done. And sometimes we play with all three singers. That happens sometimes too.
That'd
we did
awesome.
That a couple of times. So it's a, you know, it's something that could happen. There hasn't been any reason for it not to, but no one's going to fund that kind of an endeavor. Any smart businessman will stick away from that, I guess. So, it's just a matter of whether we decided to do it on our own, which could totally happen. There's nothing working towards that or against it. But I wouldn't mind seeing another one happen. Just, you know, some context.
Those all records were in rotation on Atari's tours pretty much nonstop. So I think that's...
I want to say that I played a Descendants song with Yuri, Mike Herrera, and Chris.
Oh, maybe they were Coolidge. Doing. Maybe they were doing like that MXPX All Stars thing.
No, this was random.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Way before the All Stars thing. Maybe I mean I know they were friends, but
because Chris went to like Asia and stuff, and they played Atari stuff and
Atari's
MXPX,
and MXPX songs. Yeah, that was kind of a cool thing they were doing. That made pretty good sense. I haven't seen Chris in a while. Well,
he's in LA again. He moved from Indiana a few years back to Arizona, and then he just moved because he was working with Bob Hogue at the studio. And now he's in, he got remarried and he's living in LA now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember where we were. He and his wife came to something not too long in the last year and a half. I remember getting to see him briefly, but
We still talk all the time.
Oh, he's awesome. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
I like Chris. Yeah. Good dude.
And I heard you actually, I was, very excited to have you on the show because your episode of Mike Herrera's podcast, where you guys just randomly saw each other in the airport.
In the airport, yeah.
That was awesome.
That was weird.
You just talked about gear for an hour?
I mean, it's probably not of interest to a lot of people.
I thought it was great.
But hey, you know.
Well, Mike's podcast was a big inspiration to mine because I've known Mike for a while. I mean, we're not like best friends, but we're acquaintances.
Oh, he's a sweetheart.
I listen to his podcast all the time. I was like, man, I could do one of these.
Yeah.
And so far, it's been really cool. And I get to talk to great people like you.
You know, if you're, you know, conversational guy, I think it can it's something that can be a fun thing to do, you know.
The other fan question that I had was my buddy Robert Reed on Facebook wanted to know what the chances of another solo record. And I'd like you to speak a little bit on your solo record if people don't really know about it. I know it came out on Paper and Plastic.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I'll give you the backstory on that thing just so it makes sense. So during the period where all Descendants, any of it was completely inactive. I was living in Tulsa, raising my family, and running a very small recording studio. And I was without a musical outlet. And I have never been very comfortable with my own voice. So I had these songs piling up with melody ideas, but you know, I couldn't really sing them myself.
I've always had that same problem.
I felt kind of funny about it. So I just one night my wife suggests, hey, why don't you just start calling your friends out of, you know, call buddies and ask them to sing one. And I thought, yeah, okay. So I spent some time reviewing this little batch of songs I'd been kind of growing over a few years and you know, I'd listen to them and I'd go, okay, here's the melody in my head. And I go, you know who would sound good on this is Bill McShane.
You could just cherry pick your buddies.
Yeah, so I
right?
just got on the phone and just, Bill, you want to, you know, sing a song or, you know, Chad.
And you've got your own studio, so just.
And really, I didn't even have to do that. I recorded, you know, I recorded all of it myself. My wife said, just get them all done and then figure it out. So I recorded a whole ton of songs and I had, I think there's 16 songs on that record with each one with a different buddy of mine singing.
Like Tim from Rise Against is on there.
Tim from Rise Against did one.
Milo's on there. Dan from Alkaline Trio.
Dan from Alkaline Trio's on it. Some lesser known guys.
Yeah.
John Moreland's on it, who was,
John Moreland's
who was
great.
Now gained a lot of notoriety. Then he had
Drag the River, right?
No, his or was he, no,
I always get them
John's
mixed
his
up.
Own. John,
I mean, I've listened to
thing.
John too, but
oh, he's fantastic.
He have something to do with Drag the River? Or am
no,
I just
he
imagining
had a band,
that?
No, he had a band called the Black Gold Band.
Okay, okay.
I played drums on one of their records, actually. And he had that band that he was doing, kind of a rock band thing for a while. But then he decided to move on into the direction he's been in, you know, just doing his thing by himself, which works great. So it was just, you know, a handful of friends, some known, some unknown.
Yeah.
One guy was just a guy I knew because I mixed his band's record. And I was like, God, this kid's really talented. So
that's awesome.
I hit him up, and he did a great job, did a really good song. So the thing came out really cool. It was really a lot of fun. It was a great educational experience for me. It was one of the first times I got to really explore my own melodic idea, my own vocal melody ideas a lot.
So you like produced that as well? Like, I kind of want this.
I wrote like 80% of the vocal melodies on the
okay.
record. Some of them, you know, some people can't really write to somebody else's melody. And so some of the guys didn't, but for the most part, I wrote the melodies,
yeah.
But, and, you know, oh, I have an idea for what this would be about, or I have a few lines and then somebody would expand on those. So that's how that record came together. So anyway, back to the present, I had expected to do another one, but then Descendants became active again. And so, at this point, anything that I write, I'm going to huck in front of them and see, you know, if any, I mean, because here's my guys. I have a real band yeah. instead of just me doing everything. But I have been recording, not for release so much, but I have been recording some stuff recently with me singing.
Really?
Yeah. So I have.
You feel more confident with that now? Or?
Well, what it is that, you know, I mean, when I started playing, I started guitar and singing. I mean, I learned playing acoustic guitar and singing. I started when I was 9, and that's what I did. And I did yeah. that until, I mean, I sang all the time when I played until I got into punk rock and realized that my voice, there was no way I could ever do what I wanted it to do, yeah. which was to sound like, you know, Milo or whatever. Like, I wanted some aggression. I wanted, you know,
the
that
melody,
kind
but
of thing.
An attack behind the melody.
And I don't have that. I have yeah. a low, clean, clear voice. That's what I have.
Give us an example.
I need a guitar for that.
Okay.
Sorry
to put you on the spot.
Oh, right? No. what I started doing was working really hard on, actually, my good friend Chris Caraba from Dashboard Confessional. He's a good buddy of mine. He started giving me some vocal exercise stuff to do. So I started actually kind of working on that.
Wow.
And you know, learned, you know, I've made some progress back towards being able to sing again. And I do a lot of harmonies in the band now, which I didn't used to do a lot. I do, you know, quite a bit of that now. I've gained some confidence in my voice. It'll never be never be anything I like. But I can look it square in the eye now. And, you know, you've heard the expression, you get what you get and you don't throw a fit.
Yeah.
That's pretty much where I sit with my voice. Like, hey, this is the one I have. There's nothing I can do about it. And so when I write songs now, which I do, that's my, you know, my short of going out and playing shows, the thing that I like to do the most is to write and record songs very quickly by myself.
Yeah.
And I just like to do that. I like to just, I like to kind of write and record something in 4 hours. So I do a lot of that now, and my voice is getting a lot of use, but it's not a, you know, it's still not a great voice to listen to. It could never be, you know, a centerpiece voice.
I tell people that all the time. Every band I've ever been in, I've always done harmonies and whatnot. And I understand the breathing. I understand melody, and I can sing in key, but it doesn't sound like a voice you want to listen
That's me.
To.
That's me. It, I mean, and that kind of a voice can work really well for harmonies. You
yeah.
know? And I mean, I think a great harmonizer can be, you know, an incredible addition to a band. If you think, you know, if you think about Van Halen, you think about Michael Anthony's high-pitched
oh, yeah.
harmony parts. I mean, they're integral to those songs. They're a hugely important part of them and really awesome. Or I forget the guy's name, the guy who played bass, who died, and Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I can't remember his name, though. I know who you're talking about.
That's stupid. I can't remember his name. That's ridiculous. But Epstein. Anyway, that guy was a great harmonizer. His voice, you know, it sounded incredible with them. Yeah. If you watch videos of them and stuff. So I figure, okay, well, here's a thing I can try to work on and improve at. And so that's, you know, what I've been doing a lot of that.
Genre wise, the stuff you're writing, is it kind of all over the place, or what does it kind of sound like?
The Beatles.
Really?
It sounds like the Beatles. Yeah. Everything I do just sounds like the Beatles.
That's great. Nothing wrong with that.
I mean, it's all, well, I don't know. I say that, you know, I'd say, you know, if I had big inspiration on stuff that songwriting and vocal kind of stuff, it would be the Beatles first. Yeah. It would be Elvis Costello second, and Joe Pernice from the Pernice Brothers. The Pernice Brothers, they're not widely known, but they are stunning. He's a stunning melodicist. He's incredible. So those are kind of those are my big guns for, you know, guys that I listen to. And Petty. I love his melodies. He's great, you know. Band Jellyfish. Ooh, man, those are some melodies from outer space. Those are incredible. So the, you know, the fusion of melody and harmony is deeply exciting to me. So that's awesome. That's where I spend a lot of my time. I got my wife got me an acoustic guitar that a really nice one for our 20th anniversary, because she rules. And so that has been, you know, that's been my thing lately, is playing. You know, I go out in my garage and I play guitar and I sing, you know. That's cool. I've recorded a huge batch of cover songs doing that, and just trying to kind of get my voice back in circulation, get some comfort level with it for me. I don't know if I'll ever put anything out that way. You know, I threw a couple things up on Spotify for the hell of it.
Well, that's cool.
That's it, you know.
Well, since you mentioned your wife, give her a shout out. She was another,
how you doing, baby?
She was another one of the fan questions. She wanted me to ask you when you were going to be home tomorrow.
3:08. So we're going to be late for picking up the kids tomorrow. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I just had to get that in there because, I mean, she was the first one. She's like, ask him when he's going to be home. So I was like, okay.
That's so great. That's funny. No, she's wonderful, Nat. We've been married 20 years this year, and we're just doing awesome.
That's great, man. Rules. Yeah. And I did some research prior to coming to speak with you, and one of the things I saw about your wife, she originally from Perth, Australia, or her something around
born
those
in,
lines.
Born in Tulsa, and then moved at 6 months to Perth, and lived in Perth until she was 11, and then came back. And so she has a brother in Michigan, and her parents live in Tulsa. But all the rest of her family all live in Australia. So we go to Australia every, you know, pretty much every other year.
That's great.
Spend a bunch of time over there with all of the family over there.
So you go to Perth. So are you an AC/DC fan?
I have backstory on
this. You have backstory on AC/DC?
So here you go.
Here's
a good one. And related to Nat, my wife.
Okay.
Nat's uncle, now deceased, unfortunately. I never got to meet this guy, which is really a shame. He was a really well-known radio DJ in Western Australia. His best friend growing up, Bon Scott.
Really?
Yeah. So I actually had a conversation with Nat's grandmother, also now deceased, who told me about what a nice boy Bonnie was. I mean, it was like these people were all like totally good friends. They, in fact, now Alan, this is the uncle I'm talking about, Alan. Alan was friends with Bon from the Valentine's days, you know, so he kind of predates AC/DC somewhat. But when AC/DC was getting off the ground, there was actually, they asked Alan if he wanted to manage them in the beginning. Wow. He was a well-known guy, he was well-connected, would have made very good sense. But Alan had just started his family, and so he couldn't dive into that life from the one he had. And so that didn't happen. But they were, you know, AC/DC came to dinner, you know, at the Robertson house. So it's pretty
amazing.
Funny. So there, you know, so there's a, yeah, there's an actual, you know, funny, like, you know, distant for me, family connection, you know.
That's awesome.
I'm married into rock royalty.
That's great, man.
Awesome.
So you said you guys spend some time in Perth then?
Yeah. Yeah. We often will spend like a month over there, cause it's such a, you know, it's a heavy duty travel.
Yeah.
So if we're going to go there, we usually try to stay for a few weeks. A lot of times we'll go over Christmas when the kids are out of school.
That's cool.
There and visit all the family, and we all get together there, and you know, so we usually do that every year or two. You know, we go over there.
That's awesome, man. I didn't know we were going to talk about AC/DC.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was just kind of reaching. I'm like, oh, Perth, Australia, AC/DC.
And then, yeah. You know, if you go down to Fremantle, you know, down outside of Perth a little ways, there's a great little statue of Bon Scott down there.
It's that's awesome. Man.
Yeah. He's a big deal.
So I want to get to everything kind of in my mind. I've got a mental note of things I want to ask you. Myself, Descendants and Black Flag, two of my favorite bands in the entire world. You are in Flag. And I know just from things I saw on the internet, it kind of started out as just this thing, and then it became touring. And like, can you speak a little bit about that and how it came to be?
Well, so what happened is Descendants were going to play the Golden Voice. Golden Voice is a long standing promotion, concert promotion.
Rollins
company.
Talks about it all the time in his books.
Yeah. So Golden Voice has been around, you know, promoting Black Flag shows forever. Well, they were having their 30th anniversary shows. And not long before that, Keith and Chuck had actually gotten together, played some of the songs a couple times with some guys in a band called No Age. So that had happened. Golden Voice approached Chuck saying, hey, any chance Black Flag would play? And there's just too much sort of, you know, bad blood in some parts of that camp for that to happen. But since we were, you know, since Descendants were playing and, you know, Bill and I were going to be there, the idea was brought up that maybe it could be Keith, Bill, Chuck, and I. So I'm shitting myself, of course, at that point. You know,
you got to play all Greg's parts, man.
Yeah. So we, right before Descendants went on, Flag, we didn't know what it was called then, but, and I think rumors had circulated around a little bit, but this was a big place, the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, which is like a, you know, which is a place that Black Flag had done, you know, a couple of their very biggest shows years ago.
Yeah.
Well, so we went up and played the Nervous four songs from the Nervous Breakdown EP, and the place just melted. I mean, it was fantastic. And so, you know, people started calling, you know, hey, I mean, is this a thing? Like, can we book this? And so I guess, you know, we thought, well, yeah, we could take a few shows. Nothing would hurt that. So then the idea came up to bring Dez on board too. Why not? 'Cause he's awesome and he's still around. So we asked Dez, he was into it. And so we, did a bunch of practices, and then we played at a Moose Lodge in Redondo Beach, California, which is the site of the very first Black Flag performance.
Isn't there video?
There is. There's some great video of that.
Yeah, I think I've seen that.
And so that was, you know, where we played our first show, just like Black Flag did. And then we did a run of shows through 2013 and another one in 2016.
You did some TV as well. Or no, wait, that was off. Did you guys ever do TV?
No.
Okay, I always get the two bands confused. I think they did like Carson Daly. I was in my
mind. Oh, yeah, I think they might have. Yeah.
In my mind, I was thinking it was Flag. But
no, we just kind of played a bunch of the known quantity festivals over here and in Europe.
Okay.
We got to do that. It's a blast. We have a really good time. We have a really good time doing that. That's a lot of fun. Big deal for me and a really fun challenge to try to.
Well, that's
kind
what
of fill
say.
The shoes of your favorite guitarist, you know.
Well, you
I mean,
with
Ginn
your own style
favorite,
that you have, and then Greg being someone with a definite style.
Yes.
How was that for you, and how was it maybe injecting some of your own stuff into those parts?
Well, it was interesting, and it changed over the course of the time I've been doing it. At first, I wanted to just do my best to deliver it exactly as it had been, exactly as I hear it on the recordings, and you know, and I've seen them, of course, and. You know, I wanted to try to bring to make it feel right. You can't sound like Greg Ginn.
No.
It's just not possible. But I wanted to bring as much of it as I could feel wise. So I studied very, very deeply, and then as time went on, I started adding solos in places where there hadn't been any, and. And that was met with encouragement from that camp because, you know, this is that camp of guys comes from a time when more expansive, you know, it isn't like, okay, we get the album version done and we make it perfect and then we live and die by that for the rest of our lives. That's not how they see it.
Yeah.
Music is expansive for them. It moves on, it changes. And so
well,
changing
not two
that,
videos of Greg playing the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Greg would play parts of them the same. Like the beginning of the solo in Jealous Again, he does that the same way or close to it.
Yeah.
In a lot of things you'll see. Same with the solo in Rise Above.
Definitely.
That it has, you know, chunked there. So there are elements of it that are fairly consistent, and then he would kind of go off on his tangents. And so as time went on, I began to take a lot more liberties with that stuff, and that actually was immensely enjoyable. And I think in spirit of what the band was about in their time, and it's not for everybody, you know, to just blast off into some weirdness. You know, a lot of audience people are probably scratching their heads, but the band guys weren't. They totally get that. That's like, yeah, that's what you do in this band. So it was it's been really, really fun to get to do that. We have a blast. We have a blast doing that. It's a very deep challenge physically. That music is hard to play.
It's tough,
physically. Man. It's really fast. And the thing is, a lot of that music, you know, probably started out being played one tempo and then just kind of got faster and faster and faster. So there's the way those recordings were done. There's a lot of stuff lost in the, you know, there's a lot of detail lost in these kind of bizarre recordings and them just going nuts in the studio. So when you actually, you know, Bill knows all the guitar parts, how they actually went. And so he showed me how they really go. And they're much harder and much more complicated than you might expect from the surface of listening to the records. But when you play them right, you know, when you play those parts right, you go, oh, shit, yep, that's what it is. That's what it was supposed to be. And so that's been really, really fun, really educational, and a fun challenge for me to get to try to, you know, kind of just hold up that end of something as monumental as Greg Ginn's guitar playing, which is really, you know, just out of this world.
Have you had any feedback from Greg at all? Or I know he's kind of a recluse.
No. No. I suppose any, you know, would probably be negative, you know, but
Kira was on the podcast and we talked a lot about Greg, so I've got some good stories.
Yeah, I mean, Greg is a complicated guy. You know, I can, you know, I got to jam with Greg a few times. Greg and I, as for my part, he was always really cool to me.
Yeah.
There was a weird, up to a point, there was a divide at some point where I think Greg, I don't understand where he headed or what his thinking was about how he ran his businesses and how he's done, you know, his whole life. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I didn't really know him during any of that time. And so I just kind of accept that, like it or not, he was the, you know, as complicated a guy as he is, he was my favorite guitar player.
Yeah.
He's the guy who influenced me the most, no doubt. You know, he's a monster on the guitar.
Was there ever any weirdness between camps? Because I know that when Flag started really kind of picking up steam, his version of Black Flag with Mike V singing.
Oh, yeah. There was all kinds that way. He would have liked to have seen that whole thing stop. That's for sure. But there really wasn't a whole lot he could do about that. I mean, you can't make it illegal to play songs. Yeah. You know, that can't happen. So
you weren't called Black Flag.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that there were some things that had to be hashed out between us to make that work. But, ultimately it kind of just did what it did. And I mean, I never really understood his animosity towards it, given that he never really seemed to have a great interest in reviving Black Flag.
Yeah.
He always seemed to kind of have a disdain for it almost.
It seemed like you guys almost, like the fact that you guys were doing Flag almost pushed him to, it seemed so close together.
I often, you know, part of me wondered if it didn't take what was there and sort of, you
He's
know,
like, crap, I
gotta
get on
this. He was doing
some
stuff with Ron, you know, him and Ron had been talking and were writing some songs together, unrelated. And then, you know, it happened to be at the same time that we started to announce shows that they, you know, all of a sudden it was going to be a new Black Flag record. And, you know, I was like, whoa, that was unexpected.
Well,
and so I never knew, you know, conclusively what happened there, but that's what I started to think.
I was living in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and I'd always go over to this music store in Pensacola, Florida, and I saw a poster that said Black Flag, and it had a date for this little place. And in my mind, I knew Flag was going, and I knew you were in Flag, and I knew like Bill was in Flag, different people. So I saw the poster, and there none of you guys were on the poster.
Yeah.
And I went, wait a minute, that's Greg. And then I put two and two together. That was my first, like, I didn't see anything on the internet. I saw a poster for them playing in Pensacola.
Yeah, they did it, you know, a couple of runs of tours and then just kind of stopped. I don't know, you know, I know that they had been playing with, you know, it was Ron and a couple of guys, one of which I knew, the bass player Dave, I knew, and another guy they just called Drummer. Those guys were out. And then
Drummer.
Then they got two other young guys in when Mike V took over on vocals. And then, you know, I only saw one video of that, which it sounded very different than I think of as Black Flag. But, you know, Black Flag was a band that never sounded that consistently the same anyway. Yeah. I mean, I thought it probably made great sense for him to, the way I saw it, he could move forward and we could do our own thing and it would probably be fine. Yeah. I thought, why would they care? Why would he care? You know, if Chuck and Keith are out playing some of these songs, what, you know, if anything, it, you know, everybody doing it, you know, heightens the band. It brings it, you know, fine. Like, what's wrong with that? So, but I mean, I guess, you know, I people have, you know, all kinds of different interpretations of how, you know, how much control they want to have over that stuff. And I understand that. So yeah, I don't think he was fond of our thing, but you know, we'll probably do it again, you know, at some point.
Is there any like ideas of maybe writing as that band or not?
No, that, you know, of course I was the guy going, new songs, anyone? Like, you gonna write, you know, but that was pretty much just kind of, no, we just want to really do, you know, the songs justice and that's it. Okay, fine. Cool.
That's great.
No problem.
And you guys all have like other projects.
Oh yeah. So. Everybody's busy. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah.
Are there any plans like currently on the books for that to come back, or is that just kind of an open-ended thing?
No, it's sort of open-ended, though we talk, you know, pretty regularly every few months, you know, an email will circulate or some, you know, there might be a, you know, hey, anybody want to, you know, there's, or somebody just saying, hey, hope you guys are all good, you know, yeah. Whatever, just, you know, so we're all in touch and
that's awesome.
Everything's still cool.
Well, what I'd like to do, we're approaching an hour. I don't want to take a lot of your time. I know you probably got to go play here in a little bit anyway.
Pretty quick. Yeah,
and I want to see it. But it is this one time on tour. That's what this podcast is about. Oh, yeah. It's about touring. Sometimes I forget that till right at the end, like today. But I want to know kind of, I know you've been all over the world like I have. Crazy stuff happens in other countries, but crazy stuff happens here as well. You know, back in the early days where, you know, you're eating ramen noodles with coffee water at the truck stop and
that's
sleeping on floors.
That's
like
all real.
We've all been there. Do you have anything just off the top of your head, like maybe a tour story or something crazy that just sticks out?
Well, the tour stories that are the most interesting for me are there are two. One is that we all played in Berlin while we were playing in Berlin in 1989, they announced on the television that they were going to take the wall down.
Wow.
So we were there in this moment in history. We came out of that club after we played, packed up, heard this, what had happened, packed up our stuff, tried to get out of Berlin, and that place was locked down. I mean, there was traffic everywhere. It was absolutely insane. So the first stamp into my passport is into the DDR. And then the next year I came back and I just drove right through. It was the most bizarre feeling to have just been like, wow, God, we were there for this kind of momentous occasion.
That's great, man.
So that was kind of, that's the tour story that I always think of as really the standout feature because, you know, a series of fights or whatever other stuff used to happen is hardly,
I'm always
of
looking
interest.
For the more like, you know, that's a great story. That's like you were a part of history.
Oh, yeah. That was completely.
People saying, oh, I threw a TV out the hotel room. Like, I don't want to hear
whatever.
That shit.
Yeah,
I
want to
hear the real
stuff. And I mean, we're boring. You know, we weren't a wild kind of party band. That was, you know, I was the driver most of the time. And no, I was the night driver. So, you know, I was asleep a lot or, you know, and then driving all night. I mean, we, you know, there wasn't, there wasn't, you know, the rock and roll debauchery was not part of our thing. It never was. But that is, you know, that little moment there is always something that is really kind of a special moment for me. And then the other thing is, this is a little bit more general, but I don't remember what year it was, but we actually toured in Yugoslavia when it was Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
And so that was a place where we literally had a translator. We showed up to the first of three shows, Zagreb. I don't remember which city it was.
That's the capital, or at least it. Or that's Croatia, Zagreb, I think.
Yeah. Well, we get to this venue, and there's.
Well, if it's Croatia, piles. It probably used to be Yugoslavia. Yeah. Yeah, right. Probably Zagreb.
There's these piles of like just bizarre ancient like PA equipment from fuck, I don't know what the hell.
Like, and the big horns.
Yeah, like just all this stuff. Here's some PA equipment. Like, there was nothing set up at all. It was complete chaos. And I'm a little bit techy with that stuff. Yeah. Enough just to sort of fish my way through. And so we're
some
like,
of those countries. You, it's,
so it, I had a translator.
You don't know what you're getting, man.
So I literally am like, okay, so this is a power amp, right? You know, I'd look at it and go, this is a power amp. And then a translator would talk to another guy who owned all the, you know, the club or whatever. Yeah, yeah, power amp, you know. So we built a PA out of, you know, shit from the, you know, from World War II and like put on a show. So, you know, those are, you know, the kind of the standout features. I never really, you know, there really wasn't a lot else I was doing. I was just living day-to-day life for the most part on tour. So, you know, my tour stories are few,
but those are great tour stories.
But those are things that I, when I get asked, hey, you know, what about touring? What are standout features? Those are mine.
Well, I mean, people all the time would ask me, like I said, I teach guitar and I do this rock and roll summer camp with Jason, and the kids are always like, man, what was it like being on the road? And I'm like, well, I had a bunch of movies on my iPad. And when we'd get done, I'd go lay down and watch movies and, that's yeah, it. I mean, some people party all the time. I was never that guy.
Yeah.
So
it you know, with the level of playing we hoped to do, because we were a really militant practice band.
Yeah.
We still are. We're all, Bill and Carl, you know, we all practice separately now, except Bill and Carl live in the same city. So they practice with either tapes of me playing or with a buddy of ours who comes over sometimes and fills in. So they have like, you know, real normal guitars happening. And, you know, we practice constantly, and we always have. We practiced 5 days a week for years. We figured that was, you know, the least we could do was try to be, if we wanted to be ambitious, play ambitious music, we had to really work at it. So our band was pretty work driven. We weren't, you know, there was no allure to the party for us, really.
Yeah.
We wanted to be kick ass. That was what we were about. So touring was like, you know, was me driving. That's really what it was. Yeah. I spend all my time up, you know, behind the wheel every night. So,
well, I don't want to take up much more of your time. I know you got to go play, and we have to go find a good place to watch you guys
play. Yes, I'm going to warm up my aging fingers.
I do appreciate you coming on the show. This has been an honor, so thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
What do you have coming up? Are there more shows this year? Is there anything to promote? I know you guys have a record that came out a couple years ago.
Yes, we Hypercaphium Spazinate is the last record we did. That came out last year. Everybody is currently writing. We don't have a plan for when another record will come out, but we do plan to record more fairly soon.
You guys are still in Epitaph?
In theory?
I
don't see any reason why we wouldn't be so far. The last record was, you know, kind of a one-off thing, but I expect that the next one-off will also be with them. That's so far. We love Epitaph. They've been
great.
Fantastic. Yeah, yeah. And Brett's wonderful. All the people there are wonderful. So I think that'll probably happen. And so I hope that we'll put out a record next year. That's what I would like to see happen, but I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's easier said than done when you got people living all over the place.
Definitely. Yeah.
So, but other than that, you know, we've got kind of every few weekends we go out and play a handful of shows like we did here. November 17th and 18th will be the last. That's in Tulsa. The 17th is in Tulsa. I think on the 18th,
I saw the promo
Paul
for
is going to play.
Yeah.
Sort of like an, we're just having kind of like a party, but most of the people coming to this party will be coming from out of state to just kind of spend the weekend. You know, a lot of diehard Descendant and All fans are flying, even people coming from Germany and stuff.
Wow.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. So we're going to, you know, have a couple of day end of year thing in Tulsa, and then we'll be done for this year. And then, you know, we haven't plotted next year's course yet, but we'll probably something very similar, you know, try to.
That's awesome.
Do, you know, another 50 shows. I hope.
That's so great. Well, I want to thank you once again for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And I can't wait to see you guys rock. So thank you so much,
man. Have a good night. Thanks.
Talk to you later.
And there it was, my conversation with Mr. Stefan Edgerton from The Descendants. I want to give a big shout out to Stefan and the band for having me and my field producer Jason come down and hang out with them in Indianapolis at their show last weekend. I had so much fun, and I do also want to give a shout out to my new field producer Jason. Thank you so much for helping, because I was a little bit nervous. I've never done anything like backstage, like, you know, on the fly before. So I want to give a shout out to my buddy Jason for becoming my new field producer. I want to give a shout out to Will Felick Art and Design, my buddy who's doing a lot of my artwork for my episodes, so check him out on Instagram as well. And next week on the show, I'm stoked, man. I've got Zach Blair from Rise Against. If you haven't heard of Rise Against, I don't know what your deal is, because they're one of the biggest bands in the world right now. We're going to have a really cool conversation. I want you guys to come back for that next week. That's pretty much it. This episode was kind of a dream come true. I've always been a huge fan of Stefan and the Descendants and all, of course. And, you know, it was a lot of fun, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast and letting me kind of be a part of your life. It means the world to me that you guys care and that you're checking this out, and that so many cool companies have been like hitting me up and wanting to do things with me, and different artists that want to be on the show. Like I used to have to go after people, and now people are getting a hold of me. So it's really, really cool, and I appreciate it. So thank you for listening. I'm going to leave you with three Descendant songs, because I couldn't really make my mind up. I'm going to play my two favorite songs, which are Hope and Clean Sheets, and then I'm also going to leave you with their newest single called Without Love. So I hope you guys enjoy this, and yeah, I don't know, this is a really cool thing, so thank you so much for listening. It means a lot to me that people care. So thank you very much. So before I play those songs, I gotta tell you some other stuff. It's really late, like it always is. I'm a little bit delirious. Yeah, if you want to be a sponsor, because, you know, the Awful Normals, the band at the beginning of the show, this is the second time they've sponsored an episode. They sponsored Franz Stahl's episode back in the day as well. So if you want to be a sponsor, hit me up, TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. If you just want to chat, whatever, you know, you can hit me up on any of the social medias. It's TOTOTpodcast. Call the TOTOT hotline. It's 1-765-372-8818, and leave us some love in the iTunes store. Review us, rate us, subscribe to the podcast, whatever you want to do. Tell a friend, tell whoever. This thing's growing, and it couldn't be cooler. So thank you very, very much. I'm delirious. I'm going to stop rambling now. So here's some cool Descendant songs, two of my favorite songs, Hope and Clean Sheets. And then I'm going to play their brand new single. Well, it's not brand new. It's probably been out for a year or so, but Without Love, which is on their new record. So thank you guys so much. Come back next week, hit me up, and I will see you soon.
You know it. Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.